Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing this morning? It didn't really sound like it. How's everybody doing this morning? There we go. Well, as Russ said, my name is Kevin Mammology. I'm the National Outreach Coordinator with Normal National. I really appreciate the invitation to be here with all of you today. It's definitely an honor. Over the past few months, well, actually since January, I've gotten to know quite a few of you over telephone calls, conference calls, emails, and of course the wonderful world of social media. So it's great to be here to finally meet all of you in person, or at least have the opportunity. With, you know, here in Virginia, as Russ said, there's definitely an uphill battle, but I know over the last year you guys have done a really good job of pushing the envelope here. I know there was the introduction of a decrim bill, SB 686, I believe, and then House Bill 1445. I don't necessarily agree with the limitations included in that piece of legislation. Although it passed, it did ultimately move the conversation forward here in Virginia. So it's something to keep in mind. You know, I mean, it is discouraging when you end up with legislation that doesn't really provide any care or relief to people that actually need access to this plan. And so just keep that in mind as you continue to fight here in the state of Virginia. Today I'm going to be speaking on just a couple of points. A war against a plan is a war against the American people, the lucrative business of prohibition, and organizing. Of course, that's my background. I'm a organizer at heart, community organizer, something that I'll always embrace, never run from. It's what I did prior to coming into the marijuana industry, so I'm looking forward to sharing a little bit of information about that. And forgive me, I left my flash drive back in Colorado, so we're going to be trying to run. We're going to run the slideshow from Google Drive, so I think this should work just fine here. Is this?
It won't work.
Okay, cool. So we could, as I mentioned today, I'm going to be touching on these few items. I think it's all relevant, you know, discussing why we're here. The injustice in the war on marijuana and our personal freedoms here in our country, you know, the motivating forces behind the drug war, and of course why we need to continue to organize and stay engaged. Although I don't necessarily agree with Mr. Buckley's politics 100% of the time, this quote actually stuck out to me just because, I mean, nothing could be more true about what's happening. The amount of money and legal energy being given to prosecute hundreds of thousands of Americans who are caught with a few ounces of marijuana in their genes simply makes no sense. The kindest way to put it. A sterner way to put it is that it's an outrage, an imposition on basic civil liberties and on the reasonable expenditure of social energy. I think we can all agree with that. It's a waste of time in every aspect. I mean, if you're looking at it from a financial standpoint, governmental standpoint, just basic, you know, waste of energy. And so it boggles my mind that we've been here, that we're standing here today discussing ways that we could free the plant from the hands of the government while keeping it from hands of pharmaceuticals and Monsanto and other organizations. For decades, the American family or American families have been devastated by, you know, aggressive tactics employed by law enforcement officers. We have no-knock raids, and most recently we had a roadside cavity search of a woman down in Houston, Texas. And this is all for a plant, a marijuana plant, you know, I mean, a plant created by God. And, you know, it's very frightening that we've come to that point in this country. And so we just need to be mindful of, you know, the impact that it's had on us here in our country. One of the other things that really is pushing this entire criminalization, or that continues and prolongs this entire war on drugs, is, you know, we have a very powerful, go ahead and go to the next slide, a very powerful private prison industrial complex. We have a lot of interests that are pushing for different, you know, policies such as mandatory sentencing and things like that related to drug policy. These are just some statistics that I put together, and please forgive me for, this is a little crude, I know, this is my first slideshow that I've prepared, so next time I'll probably jazz it up with some more graphics and what have you, but this is what we have today. So in 2014, there were roughly 700,000 arrests for marijuana-related offenses. 23,000 of those came from Virginia. You know, to Russ's point, it's hell for marijuana consumers out here in Virginia, and it's definitely reflected in the number of arrests. Of all those arrested in 2014, 90% were for simple possession. So, you know, I mean, it didn't go into detail into, you know, how much was possessed in each case, but just the fact that you're possessing a leafy substance could get you arrested and convicted of a criminal charge is ridiculous. One of the other things that a lot of people don't consider when we're looking at the war on drugs and the war against the American people is some of the negative fallout associated with being convicted of a marijuana crime. You know, I mean, it's not just serving time in jail, losing 6 months of your life. It's you know, decades sometimes for people when you're looking at employment opportunities or even trying to get into school. You know, I have several friends that lost financial aid over the years just because they were caught inside their dorm room with a little bit of marijuana. So to my point, 200,000 students have lost federal financial aid eligibility because of drug-related conviction. That number comes from 1998. There was a law passed by Congress that, I forget the senator's name, the brave man that introduced the amendment, but basically it said that no federal funding for educational purposes would be given out to students arrested for marijuana, or drugs, I should say. It wasn't just limited to marijuana. And one of the saddest aspects of the war on drugs is currently there are 2 million children with parents in prison. And if we're looking at the long-term impact of the war on drugs, we really need to take a look at that statistic. There was a story just not long ago about a four-year-old boy that had his son take, or that had his father locked up when he was 4 years old. He didn't get out until he was 15. And that, I mean, by that time, that the young man had found himself in gang. He was selling drugs. He was doing, you know, he just didn't have that father figure, his role model in his home to make sure that he was, you know, walking that right path. And something I alluded to just a minute ago is the lucrative business of prohibition. You know, one of the biggest obstacles that we face as marijuana advocates is not the federal government. It's these special interest groups that continue to fuel this entire thing. You know, from the private prisons to law enforcement groups, even drug testing companies are really, you know, pushing that agenda to keep this plant criminalized, to keep prohibition alive, because it's lucrative for their businesses. I've put a couple numbers up here just to show you, kind of illustrate what's going on and how they've impacted what's happening in this country. And it changes the dynamic because you have revenues being generated off the criminalization of, you know, the American people for a plant. And so now that people have a financial stake in it, it's kind of hard to get them to, you know, release that death grip on that financial stream of revenue. So anyways, in 1997, the rate of imprisonment in the United States has more than quadrupled. That's alarming. The private prison industry as a whole exceeded $5 billion in revenue in 2011 alone. It's obvious that it's a cash cow. You know, some of these, from my understanding, some of these private prisons, you know, they are publicly traded, and when their stock is at the highest is when they're at capacity in their prisons. And so, you know, when you have stockholders, shareholders coming to, yeah, I don't understand the chain of command in these private prisons, but I'm the warden or whoever, they're having shareholders coming to him saying, why do we have 20 beds open in this, you know, correctional facility? We need to have full capacity to make sure that we're, you know, at our highest, our stock is at its highest price. So it definitely creates an incentive for them to lobby members of Congress for policies that will keep people in prison as long as possible, and also require people to drug test for you name it. You know, America's Civil Asset Forfeiture Program earned law enforcement over $4.2 billion in 2012. Of course, we've seen some changes. Congress has revisited that issue, but you know, it is still very much relevant. People, local law enforcement are still engaged in seizing assets. Nebraska, it's happened quite a bit. Nebraska, since Colorado legalized marijuana, cops are, you know, literally sitting on the border. If you're coming out of Colorado, you're getting popped. And, you know, I personally have heard of stories where people have been pulled over. Just they were profiled coming out of Colorado. They may have had some marijuana shirts or something in the car, but didn't possess anything. But the cops took their money and sent them along their way. And that was, I mean, it's just so odd that that could happen without any criminal charges or anything. You just take your $500, assume it's marijuana money, and then they just go on their way. And again, drug testing is a multi-billion-dollar a year industry. Conservative projections for annual revenues exceeding $6 billion. I mean, and so the drug testing applies to the employment, pre-employment screening, if you get hurt on the job. And then also they're looking at, you know, I was reading articles about drug testing high school students, which is incredibly, you know, it's an invasion of privacy, and I think it's ridiculous to bring our children into the conversation at such an early age to start drug testing them for marijuana in schools. So moving along, we're going to go ahead and I know we're kind of pressed for time. This is an interesting slide that I wanted to share with you guys, because as I was visiting some of these websites from laboratory, drug testing companies, they actually have a marijuana outreach fund donation form. And this is to help fund their effort to drug test in states such they actually mention Oregon and Washington and Colorado. And so in addition to the special interests that are funding or that make up the Drug and Alcohol Testing Industry Association, they are soliciting donations from the public to continue their crusade against marijuana. So I just thought that was interesting. So we move along. Organize. This is an image that's stuck with me ever since my early days as a field organizer in 2007. It speaks for itself. You know, together, united, we are strong. If we try to go at this alone, divided, we're going to fail. You know, and so it's important that we keep that in mind. There's several different ideas of what the perfect legalization bill looks like, medical or recreational. But we need to make sure that we are working together to accomplish and achieve the ultimate goal of legalization. You know, I know in some other states there's some hotly contested marijuana initiatives going, well, I should just say Ohio. You know, there's a lot of frustration right now within Ohio Normal with the members and, you know, should we support issue 3? Should we not support issue 3? And it's created a lot of division. You know, one of the things that I really enjoyed about, or that I do enjoy about working in marijuana policy and advocacy work, is that it's, for me, it's a nonpartisan position. I'm able to talk to libertarians, Republicans, Democrats, you know, everybody about the issue of marijuana. And it saddens me whenever we come to an issue like Ohio, where we do have a chance to legalize marijuana, we now have a partisan argument in Ohio, where marijuana consumers are now split, you know, over the issue, what makes sense for the state. And so we got to keep that in mind. You guys here in Virginia have done a great job of coming together. Like I said, you've made some headway over the past year, even though it's been an uphill battle. And that's due to your organization. From a national standpoint, I can tell you that you guys definitely have one of the most functional and robust operations out of the entire Normal network. So hats off to you guys. So that's about it for me. This is a little quote that we have from Paul Wellstone. He was a senator from Minnesota, incredible grassroots organizer. He died in 2001 in a plane accident, but his legacy lives on. And so I just wanted to share a quote kind of to, you know, reiterate the importance of being involved in the political process and organizing. Politics is not just about power and money and games. Politics can be about the improvement of people's lives, about lessening human suffering in all of our world and bringing about more peace and more justice. So I think, I mean, that speaks to us as marijuana advocates. You know, that's what we're doing. We're trying to bring peace. We're trying to improve the lives of others by ending this unjust war against a plant. You know, I know why we're here. We're tired of being treated like second-class citizens. We're tired of our loved ones' sufferings at the hands of, you know, the government. We're just tired of it in general. We're sick of the bullshit, you know, to be quite honest. And so, it's really important that we continue to stay engaged, that you guys continue to organize events, town hall meetings, candidate forums, just tabling events, and that you're out talking to folks, right? You're cultivating relationships with your elected officials, but at the same time, you're challenging their misinformed ideas about marijuana. You know, as an advocate, we're not here to make friends with people. We're here to progress our issue. So as you're out there and you're talking to representatives and you're talking to your council members, be firm and stand, you know, your ground when it comes to the issue of marijuana. That's not saying being disrespectful, but just make sure that you're there to talk about marijuana, hold your ground. And if they try to squirm, don't let them squirm. Let them know that you're a constituent in their district and that you want an answer on this issue. That wraps it up for me.